Hi, I'm Lee Liberman Otis. I am the director of the faculty division, and on behalf of the Federalist Society, I'm delighted to welcome everybody here to the 15th annual Federalist Society Faculty Division Conference. I am going to invite John McGinnis to say a few words about Judge Bork before we get started with the program, and then we're going to go directly into our very exciting panel. So, John?
Well, thank you, Lee. It's certainly appropriate to remember Judge Bork at the Federal Society Faculty Division, because he is really the most important conservative legal scholar of the last century, and we are all his intellectual children. There are two strands to the intellectual movement in conservatism and libertarian thought in the latter part of the 20th century. One was law and economics, and the other was originalism. And Judge Bork distinguished himself by being at the center of both of them. While his obituaries did not much emphasize his law and economics work, indeed the New York Times dismissed it in a paragraph in which he said that he taught a course in pro-trust at the Yale Law School. His work in antitrust was truly revolutionary. The book, The Antitrust Paradox, was an enormous milestone, not only in antitrust, but in law and economics. Because while law and economics ideas have been percolating since the 1950s, what had not happened was a lawyer coming and giving a comprehensive discussion of legal doctrine in terms of economics, of a book length. What Bork was able to do, what Judge Bork was able to do, was bring a lawyer's gimlet eye and marry that with an economist's passion for careful modeling to create a revolution in a legal discipline, antitrust. And that revolution continued for a very, very long time, because he wrote comprehensively about antitrust, about horizontal rules, vertical price regulation, monopoly. It really only finished in the Legan case in 2005, when the Supreme Court, in a decision that I think cites Judge Bork, suggested that vertical price maintenance also should be understood as decided under a rule of reason, and thus finished what was called the Chicago School Revolution in antitrust. I would actually analogize Judge Bork here to a politician, someone like Margaret Thatcher, who completely changes the terms of the debate. People after Thatcher, like Blair, are very much part of the debate and the line she set. And that is true in antitrust. While there are still debates about certain portions of antitrust, Judge Bork's contribution sets the terms of those debates. Of course, he's even better known for his contribution to originalism. And his contributions there are extraordinary. And I think the way to measure their extraordinariness is to look at conservative legal thought before Judge Bork. If one looks at the opinions of Justice Harlan and others on the court that immediately before Judge Bork started writing about originalism, they seem not all that different in methodology from the opinions of the liberal justices on the court. But in his seminal work, Neutral Principles and Some First Amendment Problems, Judge Bork changed that. And he changed that by making a bold and innovative move by deciding that while neutral principles was part of the legal process school, he argued that neutral principles had to be derived with a neutral method, and therefore they needed to be derived through originalist methods, at least broadly understood. Now, often it's said that there are many disagreements many of us in this room have with Judge Bork on originalism. I think some of the people on this panel, I'm sure, have some disagreements with the brand and justifications of originalism that he gave. But that, I think, is quite irrelevant, or in some sense is actually a stronger, it shows indeed how powerful Judge Bork's work was. Because Judge Bork was a pathfinder. He went and he created a new chart of law by bringing originalism to understanding constitutional law. The fact that we have some disagreements on exactly where the boundaries in the new world he discovered lie is a testament to the power of his idea, and of course points up what I think is always true about scholarship. It's fractal in nature. Once you have a map of the world, one can always have a disagreement about exactly the boundaries, meant to make the boundaries more and more precise over time. But it's Judge Bork who made that originalism move in 1971 in a powerful way, which has resonated down to this day. Let me end by talking briefly about Judge Bork's defeat in the Senate, and why I think that shows, actually, again, the power of his ideas. Because while he was defeated in the Senate, his ideas could not be so easily defeated. That's one of the great things about ideas. They go around political barriers. They seep into society and change it. They're like a torrent of water that bears all before it. And that's really Judge Bork's legacy, because when we look at an opinion like Heller's opinion on the Second Amendment, that is a wholly originalist opinion, and that is a tribute to Judge Bork, because what happened, and I think it's again important to measure his contribution by what went before, in 1968, Chief Justice Burger, then a conservative, wrote a denunciation of gun rights in that well-known legal periodical, The Parade Magazine. And so that was what conservatism was at the time, a kind of ad hoc flaunting of one's policy prejudices. But what Judge Bork started was a dramatic change in that, a turn to real history and a turn to analysis. And that, as many as ideas have a way of doing, started changing scholarship right across the political spectrum. Because Heller also reflects the fact that it's not only conservatives who've taken originalism seriously, it's liberals as well. And it's that body of scholarship about the Second Amendment that had an enormous influence, I think, on the Supreme Court. There's one other thing I think one should point out about Heller. While the dissent disagrees with the majority, the principal dissent is to attempts to be originalist in nature. That, too, is a mark of Judge Bork's triumph, that even as he was defeated in the Senate, he set the contours for what seemed to be possible for a Supreme Court justice to say in that important decision. So, in conclusion, I think one has to say Bork was not simply a great conservative scholar, he was a great scholar. He was energetic and fearless. He painted in bold strokes about important and great things. And he changed the world as much as a force of nature. We are all his beneficiaries, and the only way we can repay him is to emulate him. Thank you very much.